Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Bum, 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 bum. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Rich Melzer joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. He played professional basketball in the NBA, and he's got quite a project that he's working on right now. More on that in a minute. I saw him last night with his son at the Timberwolves game. Rich, thank you for joining us.
And it's really exciting, obviously, to be a local Minnesota and Minneapolis kid, but also see the success of finally the Timberwolves coming back a little bit. I saw a team that was rallied around a common goal under Coach Finch, obviously. They look like they're having fun. They're playing really selfless basketball, and I don't care if you're the Lakers or, you know, Denver or some of these other top-caliber teams. That's tough to beat no matter who you have on it, and it's really fun to watch. Unfortunately, Lakers are having their own, you know, trials right now, I think. I think Westbrook's, I don't know if he's mentally healthy right now or confident. Hopefully it's just a phase, because I like seeing him at his peak. But the Timberwolves are going to really make some noise here towards the end of the season, and I have some high expectations with them, as do some of my friends and I.
Yeah, because, you know, people are saying, well, the play-in game, they could end up playing the Lakers, and you don't want to play the Lakers in a one-and-done. It's not really a one-and-done game, the way the format's set up. It's more like a two-and-done. But I watched last night. Now, granted, they didn't have Anthony Davis, but I go, if I'm the Timberwolves, I'll take the Lakers on any day right now.
Oh, totally. Well, even conversely to that, if I'm another team, right now, Timberwolves are the team you don't want to play.
Exactly.
Right? You know that on paper you should probably beat them, but when they're playing that type of basketball, I mean, it's something else to see, you know. And I played for Finch, and I've been looking at...
When did you play for Finch?
Yeah, I played for Finch when I was on assignment from the Houston Rockets back in 2010. He was the head coach of the D-League team.
Really?
And you know, we had a pretty good team. We had Mike Harris, who was on assignment, who was a pretty good tweener NBA player. But other than that, we didn't have the best team in the league and somehow find ourselves winning the championship. And it was that style of play, that unselfish, up-tempo, defensively driven style of play that I see now resonating. And I talked to Corey Hapola. I talked to your guy Corey about that about a year ago and go, man, I really like Chris. It's a tough market to win in, and he's finding a way to do it. And it's really interesting to see.
What kind of a coach was he when you played for him?
So it's funny to ask that. Chris was, Chris really empowered people to do what they were there to do. He wasn't a knockdown person. He wasn't a dictator. I just came off of a pretty average year overseas, and when I got there, he literally pulled me in the office. He goes, "Rich, you're 30 years old. You're in the twilight of your career. You're not going to play a whole lot." And I'm looking at him, I'm going, really? Well, that's kind of messed up.
Yeah.
And he says to me, he goes, "I need you in the locker room. I need a locker room guy to rally these guys together." And that was my role. But despite that, you know, I still ended up getting minutes, big minutes, towards the end of the year in some of those playoff and championship games, because he didn't put a ceiling on me and he held me accountable. If I didn't play well or if others didn't play well, he made sure, you know, he would rectify that. And I think he's doing the same thing now with Cat and with Edwards and with D'Angelo. Like, if those guys aren't really out there doing their thing, he'll give them a break. He'll counsel them and bring them back out there. But I like seeing him holding other grown men accountable, because it's showing up now.
You know, I mentioned you played for Popovich in San Antonio, and obviously he had superstars. If you have superstars, that's where it starts. Obviously, you can't win without talent, and he's finding that out this year as well. But was the ultimate in what Popovich was able to do was that he got great players to play together? Was that his secret sauce?
I think what Popovich did was he got people to play for each other as opposed to playing for themselves. And it was easy to play for Popovich because you knew what his drive was. You knew his intentions were benevolent. I was a tweener. I was a guy that was on the verge of, you know, maybe a couple minutes in the NBA or being really successful overseas. But he held me to, you know, a really high standard despite that. And it was easy to go that extra mile and put that extra work in for a guy like that. Chris was the same way, you know. When he takes the ego out of the game and you have to play for the guy next to you and the guy next to you has to be accountable to your expectations of them, it's a contagious behavior that I don't think we see a whole lot of in the NBA today.
I hear you, and if you can do it, you can do it. Rich Melzer, I guess. Rich, I talked about what you're doing. You ran the YMCA on the north side, and you've done a lot of different projects for YMCA, and you had an opportunity to go to another nonprofit, but much different in downtown Minneapolis, or at least that area, where you are helping the homeless, the teenage homeless. Explain where it is that you work and what it is that you're doing right now.
Yeah, so we're right downtown, literally just on the outskirt of downtown Minneapolis on kind of the southeast side there, over by the Salvation Army, and there's a Firestone there jumping on 394. But we are right now serving at-risk young people experiencing homelessness. So we provide a huge array of resources for young people that you know, don't have anywhere to go, that have troubles at home and that are experiencing challenges that unfortunately a lot of people, a lot of young people haven't had to go through. We feed them, we clothe them, we have resources for them to just really transition over the course of time out of that situation and even, you know, get job opportunities and educational opportunities to see how we can help them. It's a huge effort. They've been in business now and doing this work for, you know, 45 or more years. So I'm really fortunate to be a part of this outfit. They, you know, organizationally, they're in really good health. I was brought there after coming in on the heels of Heather Huseby, who really lifted up this mission, and her work carries on today. And we're just trying to continue to elevate it and do right by her and some of their historical work. But it is a serious pandemic right now. You know, youth homelessness, it reaches as far from, you know, Eastside St. Paul and the eastern suburbs all the way out to Anoka. Per capita, we have a pretty large amount of homeless young people every night that are, you know, have no place to go. So we're there as a tool and as a resource to mitigate that and to love them up and see how we can help.
They come through your door, and what happens next? You know, if they come in for the first time and they don't know, you know, what they're up against, they've only heard about you. What's the process like when you have somebody that comes in and says, "I'm a teenager and I'm homeless. Tell me what I got to do."
Yeah, the first one is just basic needs. You know, have you ate? Do you need clothes? Have you rested? We provide that right there on the spot. That's first and foremost, and then from there, we try to transition and figure out who they are as people, historically, what have been some of their challenges. And then from there, you know, our drop-in case managers and our service providers really, really are intentional on evaluating, you know, what they've had before, the gaps that we can fill for them moving forward, and getting them into the right model of support, whether that's, you know, housing obviously is a big thing for us. We transition young people directly into housing when we can, making sure they have sustainable resources to mitigate hunger, you know, being out in the cold. I mean, you name it. You name it, we try to provide it. If we don't have it there, we work with other partners around the Twin Cities that they can resource those things from too. So it's a huge effort. And, you know, we need a lot of support, but right now where we're at, we're hoping we're doing all that we can, and we want to be one of the best providers for young people experiencing homelessness in the Twin Cities.
What, you know, I'm thinking out loud going, well, where are the parents in this? If your teenager's not coming home at night, I mean, how do they end up homeless? How do they end up homeless? What's the parents' role in it?
No, there's a lot of roles. Some of it is mental health for some of our young people, which shows up in obviously, you know, a million different ways. Some of our young people are actually homeless as a preference to being at home with their families, believe it or not, because they've had trauma and they've been misguided as parents. So there's a lot of reasons why young people and how young people end up in this situation. And we're trying to meet them without judgment, with love, with empathy, and with real tools to help them get out of that situation the best we can.
Rich Melzer, I guess. Rich, how many of them are chemically dependent when they come in? What's the percentage?
You know, I would say for, and I don't want to speculate, but I would say for the large percentage of young people, it's either chemical dependency or mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that other small group in there that is just accustomed to being on their own, accustomed to being in this situation. I don't think there's a firm answer on that, but yeah, chemical dependency and mental health play a huge part, unfortunately, in the reasons these young people are showing up. And, you know, we're doing everything we can to help them out.
Rich, just an aside, but it goes in conjunction with, we see the teachers strike for the city of Minneapolis, and you're a product of the city of Minneapolis. How does that strike you? What scares you the most about, you know, when kids are not in school?
You know, that the what scares me the most is what families are doing at home. You know, Minneapolis public schools are what they are, you know, good or bad, however you feel, but parents can't depend exclusively on the schools to educate and to nurture them. They have to have things at home, whether it's, you know, chores or on-the-job training or responsibilities they have at the house. Parents have to really step up right now and make sure that while young people are out of school, they're still at home having some sort of regular expectations and cadence to hold them accountable to continued education and knowing that there's going to be a schedule and a rhythm in place at some point whenever the strike concludes and ends. But I think the responsibility right now is very, very high for the parents to be active and maybe to ask a little bit more of themselves than they've had to do historically before the strike.
Rich, always appreciate seeing you, my friend, and we will talk again soon, but keep up the great work that you do in this community, and the way that you give back to the city of Minneapolis is Hall of Famish, and we appreciate it very much.
Always, Mike. Love you to pieces. I love hearing from you. I know your listeners are in tune and supportive, and I'm grateful to be here. So we'll talk again soon, Mike. Keep doing your thing.
You too. Thank you so much. Rich Melzer, wow.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.